Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. Real happy to have you here. We're going to take your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. What's fun during the day is even though I'm not on the radio all day long, I'm still talking to farmers all day and getting updates on harvest and how things are going. My first picture that came across my phone this morning was from West Central Minnesota, a combine where the sieves were all plugged up with frost and snow. And wow, here we are, the middle of October, and there's already snow in some areas. We had a few flakes fly this morning. I know, looking out the window when I got up this morning, which was not a really good or welcome sign on October 16th. But hey, you know what? That's just the reality of things, that winter is coming. Fall has been great so far. Harvest has moved along quickly, but yeah, there's going to be an end date to it eventually. All right, yeah, Brent.
That doesn't bother me much at all, Darren, and I'll tell you why. Number one, when we get cold weather, it kills bugs, diseases, and weeds, and that's amazing for us in the northern part of the United States. And then the other thing is, we were having an issue just a couple days ago on some ground you bought here about 3 years ago where we still can't get tiling, still after 3 years. And I told the guys, look, this is it. Okay, so as soon as that frost gets to about a foot deep, we're going out there again and we're finishing this thing up. I'm just sick of, hey, we got to wait, we got to wait, we got to wait. No, we don't. We have frost. We can get out in anything. So, yep, been getting stuck because it's too wet for three straight years, could never do it. They got close, and they go, yeah, that's all we can get this year. And I go, no, it's not. We're going to finish it up. We're going to wait. It'll probably be a month and a half here, but once we get that frost a foot or so down on the ground, then we'll just go through with the tile plow. We'll pre-rip it. We'll throw that tile in, and now it'll be perfectly drained. So, I mean, we only have a little bit left to do. When you're talking a few feet, who cares? Yeah, if we had project after project after project to do, that would be a little bit different. But anyway, I don't get too shook up about it because we've seen this our whole lives. In October, we get a few snowflakes flying. It's no big deal. That just basically signals you, like, hey, you better hustle it up. We're already done with harvest. So it's just we got to keep pushing because we're trying to spray. We're trying to put tile in. We've got to do tillage. We're doing some strip till. We're applying fertilizer. I mean, we've got everybody who's on the farm, and we're even robbing a couple other guys or let's say hiring a couple other guys seasonally to get this work done so we make sure it gets done this fall. And we've got a really aggressive plan on our farm this fall, in part because it has been so dry. So we are getting tile in without having to get stuck and have two pole tractors or anything for the first time in many years. I mean, this is the driest we've been in the fall, we've been since the fall of 2013, so 7 years ago. It's our first chance in 7 years to get to some of these areas, and we're done with harvest, the second earliest ever on our farm, so we're getting fertilizer spread early, getting our spraying done. A lot of these jobs, it's great. It's exciting. It's fun. But yeah, when a little bit of snow flies, it's not the end of the world. We see that, but usually we don't get much snow until we get to mid-November, so we typically have about a month from now, and so that's a lot of time we can get stuff done.
Oh, man, there's so many things going on out on the farm right now. And I know on our farm, for sure, we've got plenty of projects and plenty of work to do because of what happened in 2018 and 2019, where you just didn't have a chance and things kind of backed up. But there's also areas of the country, Brian, that they've still got a lot of harvest to go. Stuff got ready a little bit late. They were blessed and got a little more moisture, perhaps, or maybe they got moisture at the wrong time. It's one of the things we were talking about, drainage yesterday, and getting some of these fields where you can still get into them is important.
Yeah, you've got to have that drainage right. But, you know, the other thing is I don't like it when we're done. Well, I mean, it's a double-edged thing. I'm just trying to say it's nice to be done early with harvest, but by the same token, you hear everybody talking about cover crops. Well, our cover crops are called corn and soybeans, and we raise full-season corn and soybeans, and we're typically harvesting soybeans in the first week or so of October, first 10 days, whatever, and then we're harvesting corn the last 3 weeks of October, and that's typically it. And then our growing season is completely done, no chance that anything else is going to grow. So that is our cover crop. I don't like it when we've got crop coming out the middle of September. It, to me, that's too early. But this is a fluke year. This is the third hottest year in 20 years. So it's not normally going to happen this way.
No, that's right. And you have to keep those things in mind. I've been watching a lot of the yield data that's been coming in, watching a lot of the plots that have been coming out in our region, and also talking to a lot of farmers about, hey, did your full season stuff do better this year? Did your early season stuff do better? Well, the last couple of years, it's been one story. This year, it's another. The heat units that we've had are just amazing. I can't even believe it when we're taking out late maturity corn that we wouldn't even dream of planting on a normal year. And it worked just fine, and it's coming out of the field dry. That's pretty interesting for me, because a lot of years, Brian, we'll plant stuff in the mid-90s for maturity, like 95-day, 99-day corn.
Well, not a lot, and, but yeah, some. Yeah, I agree. And yeah, it's just
this year, 112-day corn's coming out of the field. Great. Wow.
Yeah, you just don't know. And so this is, too, why right now, for everybody listening, you're most likely getting hit up by your seed dealer. And your seed dealer's saying, hey, order some seed, whatever. So you're starting to think about, all right, well, maybe I should order some seed now. And they're going to probably push you on, well, this is the hot number, and this is winning plots. Don't fall into that trap. I'll promise you what's going to win this year is not going to win next year about 9 times out of 10. That's just the way it works. Darren and I have been doing this our whole lives. Darren looks at varieties every day. He's working on looking at breeder plots and everything else, trying to find the best varieties out there. We don't know because we don't know what the weather is. Last year was the wettest in history for us. This year we've had the driest period from July 7th to today that we've ever had in history in 130 years. Driest period ever. So you just don't know from one year to the next.
That's exactly right. You got to prepare for that. And that's why it's so fun on Farmer Friday to talk to folks all over the place. What's happening on your farm? What's happening in your area? What observations have you got from what's happening out in the field or what's happening in the markets? Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us as well, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. We'd love to have you join the show by calling us at 844-44-AG-PHD. You're in for a treat now. We got Kylie Epperson with us right now with the Midwest Farm Wives podcast. Kylie, how's it going?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. How are things down in Missouri?
Really, really good. We've had incredible weather here in the northeast part of the state. We are about 3/5 done with harvest. That's a rough estimation. It's just been really good. No complaints.
You know, the one thing about great weather that we found this year was that means no breaks. That means you're just going to keep going and going and going. Is that the case for you guys, or are you smarter than us down there?
In September, we've been taking our Sundays off, but I'd say the closer we get to November, we'll be working until the weather kicks us out.
Yeah, it's, you're right. Early on, everybody can be a little bit patient, but then there's kind of a go time. So what happens in northeast Missouri then in these fields? Is there a cover crop that goes in, or is it just a matter of getting all the fall work done that you want to get done?
I'd say it definitely depends on the farmer. We do have some cover crops that go on, but mostly for us, after harvest is over, we will be mainly focused on fall fertilizer application and tillage.
You know, with livestock too, I know a lot of things kind of get pushed to the side that can wait. I would assume there's projects around livestock too that, okay, now we better get serious about getting ready for winter.
Yeah, we were really adamant about getting everything that we could done ahead of harvest. And then our livestock absolutely gets taken care of. But like you said, the little things that can wait till after are. So I'm sure when we get a rainy day, we'll be playing catch up on fixing equipment and doing some livestock work that maybe didn't need to get done right at the time that something happened.
All right. So talk to us about the Midwest Farm Wives podcast. What's going on there and how can people get involved? How can people check out what you're doing?
Yeah, Whitney and I have been on the podcast for about a year now, and we actually just passed 100,000 listens, which is a huge milestone for us. We are reaching out to other farm women and hitting that niche demographic of people that need someone to talk to or listen to, and Whitney and I are just swamped busy with farm wife duties and farmer duties right now, so we're kind of filling in some episodes, but we are excited to keep the podcast going, and you can find us anywhere that you listen to a podcast.
We talk about a niche. This is a huge niche. It's not a small one.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people out there that are just, like you say, looking for some encouragement. And with farming, there's constantly a challenge. I mean, it isn't easy. That's why not everybody wants to do it, nor is it something that you're just going to get rich overnight in either. So what are some of the topics that you find farm women most interested in?
I think they want to have a community that makes them feel like they belong. And that's exactly what Whitney and I offer. We live day-to-day lives being both farmers, moms, wives, and we both work on our farm also. And so we kind of offer that unique perspective of that Me Too attitude. They can say, oh, someone else is doing exactly what I'm doing, and I don't feel so alone, because while it is a big demographic of farm wives out there, it's also, farming is just such a small percentage of the population. So we like to offer a community for people to come hang out with us.
All right. I had a friend over the years who tells me that farm wives are much better grain marketers than the men on the farm. What are some of the other things that you think farm wives are getting underestimated on the farm?
I mean, tractor driving. My husband finally put me on a tractor this year, and I didn't do too bad with his 5-minute instruction guide. But I can't say we're better. We are capable. Let me rephrase. Other than that, we just do it as a team. So I don't know that we're better at any one thing than the men.
No, I think it's interesting, and I do think farm women get sold short on this deal. I do completely, and I talk to women all the time who are heavily engaged in the farm. It's not just, well, I'm going to look out the window and see what you're up to, honey.
Yeah,
no, it's people that know exactly what's going on and do a great job managing. We're really, really happy that you're doing the podcast, really happy you're building this community of farm women. Kylie, thank you so much. Really appreciate what you're doing. Good luck to you. Stay safe this harvest.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah. Let's head over to Wisconsin. We got Alan Brooks with us right now. Alan, how are you doing?
Very good.
All right. So how are things going in your part of Wisconsin?
Well, our processing crops are pretty well done. Mine are all done. Soybeans are probably 50-60% done. And field corn people are just starting on.
Okay, talk to us about the processing crops. You're talking canning peas, sweet corn, those types of things?
Yeah, I have sweet, my stuff is mostly all frozen, but it's sweet corn is my main crop. I've got lima beans, green beans, green peas.
All right. Are they fun crops to raise, Alan? I know you've got an opportunity, if everything goes well, to make some money doing this, of course, but are they fun crops to raise?
Well, they're challenging. It's a different challenge every time, and we're planting different varieties and different times of planting. We're planting for months at a time, so we see many different challenges.
You know, you mentioned that with everything that's going on in our country, food production is just critical. And I know the processors are really fussy about quality and how those crops are raised. Did you run into any extra challenges this year?
No, I don't think so. Over the normal challenges, one of my tenants works for one of the processors. And he's working 12-hour days, 7 days a week.
Wow.
They're that busy.
That's a lot of hours in a week. And I know growing up on the farm, I didn't realize that. There was a time where Brandon and I got thinking about this. I don't know if we were just feeling sorry for ourselves or what, but we're like, man, we're putting in a lot of hours. And I know we had figured some 80-hour weeks in there, and we're like, man, and we were having fun and everything. It's fun raising these crops, but it's definitely a lot of work. When you get to harvest then with the processing crops, I would assume frost is a big deal and you're trying to get stuff done ahead of that.
It depends on the crop. Green beans are more sensitive because, it's the pod, so if the pod gets frosted, you're in real trouble. Lima beans, it actually has got to freeze down, and they're only dealing with the seed in the pod, so you can get frosted and it doesn't matter. Sweet corn, they're looking at the pH of the sweet corn, and there's two processors that I know of that are still harvesting, but they'll measure the pH of, as long as it doesn't get too low, then they keep on harvesting.
Interesting. What is the cutoff on that? Do you know what the cutoff is for sweet corn?
I don't know what the pH numbers are. They're all saying that they're not in trouble now. And it depends on how hard they get frosted, because initially it just takes some of the leaves and the outer parts of the husk. And they're only concerned, of course, with the kernel.
Sure. All right. So you mentioned, let's go back to your soybeans and corn. You said soybeans maybe 50-60% done, something like that. Are the beans super dry in your area where we're at in South Dakota? Wow. If there's still beans out there, they're pretty dry.
Well, we've gotten little showers now and then, but they tell me the people that are doing it is from 10-14%.
Okay. Well, that's not bad at all. Nope, that's not bad. And the corn is a little bit slow coming. You've had enough rain. Is stuff still green there, or have you got some frost now and it's all starting to turn?
It's pretty well turned. Even some of the double crop soybeans, there's a significant amount of green peas growing here, and so the early peas are double cropped to soybeans, and they're pretty well frozen right now.
Yeah, it's interesting just talking to folks in different places to hear how things are a little bit different. We're talking to Alan over in Wisconsin, who has caught a little bit of rain, and harvest is moving along pretty good. Canning crops out. Now it's moving on to finish the soybeans and get into that corn. Alan, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Have a great rest of the harvest season.
Thank you.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We've also got a number of emails that have come in already. radio@agphd.com is our email address. If you've got a picture or a soil test or just want to write out your question, that's a great way to go too. We'll be right back after this.
Got resistant weeds? at Tough 5EC is your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer Amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltrumUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at SoilWarrior.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday, and thanks for joining us on today's program. If you'd like to be part of the show, you can give us a call. Our phone lines are open throughout the day here, 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can always email us, radio at agphd.com. Got Mark on with us right now, out doing some harvesting, I'm betting. Mark, how's it going?
Good. You?
Good, good. Where are you at today?
We're cutting beans in Arkansas today.
Excellent. So talk to us about soybean yields down there. I know the weather's been interesting there, too, like it has all over. But what are soybeans like? Is it a good year for beans?
Yeah, I've got probably the best year I've ever had here up to this point. We moved over here across the river, and these beans are all shattered out on the ground. I don't know what happened, but they're the same variety that we were cutting yesterday, making 65 and 70, and now they're making 15. So I don't know what happened.
You know, one of the things with shatter that's interesting, and certainly there can be a hail event or something like that, but we see disease sometimes coming into play, like anthracnose. What are the stalks looking like? Are you seeing a lot of black on the stalks, or do the stalks look clean?
Yeah, the spots where they're shattered out, the stalks are a lot darker than where they're not. I can't put my thumb on what the difference is, but there sure is a difference out there.
Yeah, that'd be something I'd check into. I suppose, at anthracnose.
Yeah, I suppose it could be soil types or, you know, something. I don't know.
Yep. Well, I'm glad the beans have been good up to this point, at least. How are you coming on harvest? You guys getting close to done, or you got a ways to go?
Yeah, we're probably probably by the end of the weekend, we'll be two-thirds. We were about half done when the last hurricane come through. So that'll have, we'll have it down to under 1,500 to go probably by Monday or Tuesday. So we're getting closer.
Yeah, every area's got their challenges. The hurricanes certainly have been something. Did you see a lot of damage from that on your crops?
Well, we got started a couple of days ago, and the damage hasn't been too bad. But I moved over in a part of the field yesterday that obviously must have had some water backed up in the field before it got out, and their damage was 5 or 6%, which isn't as bad as it's been in some years. I've seen it be 20 and 30 and 40 in the past. So it's not good, but it's historically not bad for being through two hurricanes so far this fall.
Yeah, that's for sure.
These beans have had 2 7-inch rains on them since they got ready to harvest.
Wow. Yes. Yeah, that's probably got something to do with it.
It's kind of funny. I got my combine in four-wheel drive so we can keep going, and I talked to my dad on the phone in Kansas, and he don't have enough moisture to get wheat up.
Yeah, I can relate to that. We're in the same boat on that one. I know we've got a neighbor that tried to seed some grass over a month ago. Nothing sprouted, hardly had a drop of water on it. So, yeah, it's not coming at all.
Yeah.
So, talk to me, Mark.
Go ahead with your question. What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mark. All right, go ahead with your question.
We got some resistant Johnson grass pretty bad. My agronomist is saying a gallon of Roundup here in the fall. What do you guys think? Or what do you think?
Well, what is it resistant to? Is it resistant to Roundup or is it resistant to ALS?
Yeah. We can kill it in the seedling stage, but once it gets the rhizome, you can't kill it. You can't kill it in the spring of the year.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I don't have firsthand experience of that. We don't have that on our farm, thank goodness, at this point anyway. But you're right. We see the same thing with some other perennial weeds with rhizomes. They're much easier to get early on. And if you can still kill it early on and they're having good luck with that fall application, I'd be all over that. No question about that. The other alternative that you have then when you get in crop is just to use every other mode of action that kills grass. If you've got Liberty as a mode of action, some guys say, well, Liberty is the same thing as Roundup. Nope, much different. Liberty is just above ground, so it's not the greatest on some of that stuff, but you can burn it back. Otherwise, you can utilize, a lot of the grass killers that you'd be putting out there, Assure 2 and Clethodim, those types of things in soybeans. In corn, we don't have a whole lot of great options there. We have less options than we do in soybeans.
Yeah, I've actually had some decent results spraying Liberty in the spring with burn down on some resistant Johnson grass and Italian ryegrass. I've thought about maybe putting a quart of that in here this fall too with the Roundup, or would you recommend against that?
No, I'd do one or the other if it was me, but yeah, like you say, okay. Nothing's resistant to Liberty at this point. It just doesn't get down in the roots. Well, if it doesn't have any rhizomes yet and you're getting it just in that seedling stage, you should be pretty effective then, I would think, with the Liberty.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, I guess that answers my question then.
All right. Well, stay safe this harvest season, Mark. Good luck to you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks. Let's head over to Kentucky. We've got David on with us now, just joining in. David, how are you today?
Good. How you doing today?
Good. How's harvest going, first of all?
Good. Not quite half done with corn. Beans, we started yesterday. Probably would be done with corn or be a little farther into beans, but we've been planting a lot of wheat. And I say plant wheat. We're drilling it, just cover crop.
Okay.
Just to try to get our organic matter up.
Yeah. Is this the first time doing that, or have you been doing that for a while?
Been trying to do it, but we just haven't caught weather. Last couple of years, we haven't been able to get everything planted so timely. So it's late. We've got really good ground's warm, it's nice out, and we're banking on a dry fall, so we're pushing, I don't know, like everything. Trying to get next year better than this year and so on and so on. I want every year to make more yield.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's good. That's a good message for the non-farmer to hear and the farmer alike that, all right, big priority for us on the farm is we want to have a good crop this year, but we want it to get better and better and better. And I love that you're starting with the soil because a lot of times folks will say, all right, so do I just plant more seeds per acre or do I put on more fertilizer or whatever? Let's just look at the soil and see what we can do and try and build that up, have great soil health, build our organic matter levels, those types of things. I love it.
Well, you know, and where my ground, my better ground, I back off my seed on my bean population. I can, which I plant 140,000 on my good ground, 185 on rough dirt. Where we just, I use an older style drill with a Coulter cart. It sizes up my corn stalks. It does a couple things real nice. Between the Coulters on the cart and the disc openers, it sizes up stalks. I get the weed planted. Next year, spray it off. It makes a beautiful seed bed for beans.
Yeah.
It helps choke weeds. I know a lot of guys like to, I got some roly-poly ground, some fields that guys are like, well, that's marginal, but I.
Hey, that's what you do when you're getting started farming.
Right. I take care of the waterways, so it ain't that bad. It's pretty good actually, but we're fighting water hemp and Palmer down here now, like it's unbelievable. And I can go out and spray or I can plant wheat as far as dollar wise, and I think the wheat choking everything out next spring is a huge benefit too.
Yeah, it's been nice. I think that's been one of the underappreciated values of the cover crop. A lot of people talk about soil health and these types of things, but when we can choke out these resistant weeds, I know I've talked to farmers all over that have said, if I've got a cover out there that I can plant into, I've got a lot less weed pressure, saves me a lot of headaches for the next crop. Well, David, good luck to you here the rest of this harvest season. I know you got a ways to go on the corn and beans, but love to hear what you're doing to try to make things better for the long term. Thanks for calling today. It's Farmer Friday on our show. We'll take your calls and questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Make every bushel count with the End Zone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the End Zone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the End Zone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
When it comes to trusted herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. And you certainly know Nufarm exclusive Weedmaster. For decades, Weedmaster has been the go-to herbicide for consistent burndown weed control in a huge variety of crops, and in range and pasture management too. Don't let yield-robbing weeds stand in the way of your progress or profits. Nufarm and Weedmaster Herbicide, here to help.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday here. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD. Also, you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. You can even find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Well, we'll get back to the phone lines here in just a second, but let's jump into the AgPhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, we got a number of questions that have been coming in here. I'll start firing them at you if you're ready to go. First one, I heard you talking about base saturation for calcium and magnesium and how that may vary. Your recommendation may vary for lighter soils versus the heavier soils. I'm curious, what are the percentages that you would like to see on a soil test, ideally in the light soils and the heavy soils for calcium and magnesium base saturation?
Okay, let me first say, when we start talking about calcium and magnesium, it's important, but what's more important are NPK, soil pH, and many of the micronutrients. So I'm just trying to say, I wouldn't take my first dollars and work on correcting calcium and magnesium. But over time, if we can, we'd like to get our ratios or our percentages a little bit better, and I'll explain why. What we want in heavy soil, so when we start talking 20 cc and up, we'd really like that number to be down around 12 or 13% magnesium, and let's call it 65, 75, somewhere in that kind of range, calcium. Okay, so 12 to 13 magnesium, 65 to 75 calcium, something like that. With the heavy soils, what we're after is more porosity. Okay, we need more porosity, and you get that by having higher calcium levels. So contrast that with light soil. If you're under a 10 CEC, you've got light soil. Okay, there's a lot of sand out there. And you want to do anything you can to make that soil hold more water, nutrients, everything really. So in order to do that, you put more of the small particle magnesium in that soil. So for the light soils, we'd like, let's call it 18 to 20% magnesium. Okay, and then we still want the calcium to be at least 65%, all right, or, you know, right around that kind of range. So the point here is with the light soils, we want to tighten them up by putting in more magnesium. With the heavy soils, we want to loosen them up by having more calcium and a little less magnesium.
All right, and, you know, you mentioned, just to start off with, well, we won't start with calcium and magnesium. That wouldn't necessarily be our first dollars, but it could be, too, because if your pH, for example, is really low, well, we need more calcium. And so we'd be putting out some lime out there, and we'd be adjusting
pH
those percentages.
We're super interested in pH. But if pH is fine and you have the choice of, hey, I'm either going to invest in gypsum or some magnesium source, or I'm going to put on more potassium, I'm spending the money on potassium.
All right. Well, thanks for that question. We really appreciate that. I know calcium and magnesium we talk about quite often here, but it's kind of nice to just summarize it quickly like that. Got this one from Jerry over in Michigan. He said, I'm watching your show on a regular basis, really enjoying it. I'm wondering about your three pre-strategy for soybeans, if you change anything up here for Michigan, and what exactly are the three pre's?
Okay, so three pre's, it's a yellow, it's a PPO, and it's metribuzin. So specifically for the yellows, we're talking either prowl in no-till or trifluralin in conventional till. Metribuzin is metribuzin. That's like the old Sencor or Lexone. And then you've got PPO. Now, by PPOs, we're talking two products. It's either Valor or Authority. If you get those three pre's out there, the whole point is all three have good activity on most Roundup-resistant broadleaves, including water hemp, Palmer pigweed, kochia, common ragweed, although trifluralin isn't the greatest on common ragweed, but helps a little bit, and the other two are really good. Lamb's quarters, I mean, almost all the Roundup-resistant weeds, those three are really good. So the reason why we want to use those is you can't use any of those post-emerge. You can't use any of those in corn. And so we're making it really good for our rotation, not only with crops, but with chemistry. We want to rotate chemistry when we go corn to beans or beans to wheat or whatever. Rotate chemistry. And when you can't use these things post, you've got one chance. Use them pre. They're fantastic. And now, if you can get 99%+ of your Palmer pigweed, your water hemp, your kochia, all these tough weeds under control, well, now post-emerge it's so much easier. And then you don't have to be under the gun trying to spray dicamba late or, you know, doing things off-label and stuff you shouldn't do. You have so few weeds left out there, it's great.
Yeah, those pre's have been really big, and they can work in any tillage system. That you just have to switch a few of them up if you're in no-till versus conventional till, but still you're using that same type mode of action out there on your farm to take care of a wide variety of weeds, and as you mentioned, just making it so there's hardly any weeds left when you have to come back with your post-emerge spray makes it so much easier. Thanks for that question. Really appreciate it. Got this one from Ryan in Nebraska, and he said, earlier you guys were talking about a conversation with Neil Kinsey and how applying too much of a product, I think lime was your discussion, could cause other nutrients to become tied up and not available for the crop. My fear is that we did the same thing. So my question is, how do I tell if nutrients are tied up?
Yeah, that's a little bit complicated. So with phosphorus, for example, if let's say your pH is below 7, you'll typically get a weak Bray test and a strong Bray test. The weak Bray test shows you what's available right now. The strong Bray shows you that, hey, at least some of that phosphorus is tied up. So, for example, if it's a P1 of, or weak Bray of 50 and a strong Bray of 100, well, that shows you 50 are available right now. 50 more could be available at some point if they come undone in the soil, if they get less tied up, basically. But what you're trying to do is get your soil in balance overall. So we really worry about, we were just talking about calcium and magnesium a little bit earlier. If magnesium all of a sudden is 40%, well, that magnesium is going to cause issues out there. For example, potassium. It's going to really reduce the amount of potassium that might get into your plant. If you have excess calcium in your soil, calcium can bind with phosphorus to form calcium phosphate, which is insoluble in water and unavailable to plants. So there isn't, on a standard soil test, you don't just get readings for, okay, well, this nutrient's available, and here's how much is tied up. I wish you did. That would be nice, but you don't get that.
Nope, that's for sure. Okay, another question. This one comes from...
So I think to help this particular farmer, I'd just say, if you want us to look at your soil tests, we'll look at them and give you an idea if things are we feel things might be getting tied up. But if you can get the soil pH down into the 6s, you get your calcium-magnesium kind of in balance, you have lower sodium levels, you start getting things in balance, then you're in good shape and you're going to reduce your amount of tie-up.
All right, yeah, if we have a soil test and a plant tissue test, that's where we can see a lot of things. And I think it's very interesting when we get farmers who send us, hey, here's a soil test from the exact same GPS spot where I'm pulling my plant tissue test, and I'm seeing high levels of one nutrient on my soil test, it's not getting into my plant. That's a great indication that something's tied up, something's happening out there, there's some kind of reaction going on. And yeah, that's what I think. If you have both those tests, it's a good way to know. Otherwise, on that plant tissue test too, one thing that I could say is, even if the lab says it's low or says it's high, it may or may not be enough for the yield level that you're at. That's a whole nother story. But just seeing, hey, I've got a high number of parts per million in my soil, I've got a very low number of points per million in my plant itself, that's a good indication you may have something going on. It's Farmer Friday and Ag PhD Radio. Going to dive into more questions in the Ag PhD mailbag in just a little bit. We're also taking your phone calls too at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's A-G-B-I-O-M-E.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
Farmer Friday and Ag PhD Radio. It's been fun hearing from farmers all over. We would love to hear from you. Love to hear how harvest is going on your farm, or if you're planting or just out doing some work around the farm. Our phone number is 844-44-AG-PHD if you'd like to call in and chat a little bit. Or you can send us an email to radio@agphd.com. Yeah, it's fun digging into the Ag PhD mailbag too, because you never know what questions are going to come up. And just like picking up the phone, you don't know exactly what we're going to be talking about. We got Tom on with us right now out in Oregon. All right, Tom, you had an interesting year, to say the least, out where you farm. Talk to us about what's up right now.
The majority of corn harvest is complete, and trying to get some fall tills done and fall fertility work finished up.
Okay, so talk to us just a little bit about the fertility. Are you in a build program on a lot of your ground, or are you on a system of just let's feed the next crop and go from there?
On ground that I physically own, yes, I'm on a build program, and I'm kind of on a break the bank program too, because I want high yields and I want to get there today. I'm tired of waiting.
You sound like my brother. Is this Brian on the phone? I don't know, Tom.
Well, I mean, we know in most cases what amount of fertility it takes to raise that crop, so why not just get it done and let's do it.
No, I agree with you. If you can do it without putting yourself in the poorhouse, I'm all for it. Let's try and get some of this ground up to snuff. And we talk about that a lot. I was just chatting with the guy we've been working with now for about a year, and he said, you know, what's really interesting about the way you guys talk about fertility is a little different than others. You're looking at minimum levels in the soil and optimum levels in the soil, and let's build towards that, where most people are just talking about, here's what crop removal is. Let's make sure we get at least that much out there. So what are your targets? What are you trying to build to on your farm? Is your ground naturally rich in something like phosphorus or potassium or something, or you pretty much need to build everything?
Well, the only thing my ground is rich in is being deficient in everything. So all nutrients across the board need to be raised. I feel that none of the levels are adequate, and what I'm seeing on soil tests are not adequate. So, I mean, if it's going to take a unit of nitrogen for a bushel of corn, then there's no reason to put that kind of fertility on unless the rest of your secondary and micronutrients are going to support that.
But I totally,
in my opinion,
totally
so
agree with that.
We got a lot of micros to build, so I would like to get to 3 parts per million on all my micros, if not higher. But you got to start somewhere, and you got to have a baseline. So that's what I'm working on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And when you have a different philosophy like that, of course, everyone's going to tell you, oh, that's not going to work. And even fertilizer dealers will say, well, I'll help you spread that, or I'll provide it to you. But I don't know. I don't want to be held responsible for this. I think one of the things that I like that you're talking here is just looking at everything rather than saying, let's build them one at a time. Oh, let's put a whole bunch of N out there when everything else isn't ready to support those levels. Well, that's a mistake. And if you just say, well, I'm first going to build up phosphorus or first going to build up potassium, well, it's quickly going to not become your yield limiting factor. So I like getting a little bit of everything out there as you can afford it. Brian, we've done a lot of this on our farm too, trying to build up soils. Do you have any advice for Tom as he's starting with a completely deficient field and trying to turn it around really quickly?
Well, I'll say this. If you're on a build program, don't build all of one nutrient, then the next year build all of another, then the next year build all of another. Because what's going to happen is each year your soil is going to be out of balance. So if you're going to be on a build program with all of them, and you say, well, I can't afford to do the whole works in one shot, that's fine. Just be on a slight build program with each nutrient. And also, obviously, we can't build the leachables like, well, really nitrogen's the big one. Sulfur, you got to be a little careful with. Boron, a little bit careful, but if you have heavy soil, not a big deal. But where I'm going with this is you got to look at phosphorus, you got to look at copper, you got to look at zinc. If you start getting one of those three out of whack compared to the other two, now you have a real problem. And unfortunately, I have the data to back that up on our own farm where we've screwed it up. And that's why I'm talking about this. So hopefully you don't have the same yield loss and suffer the same consequences that we did.
You know, I think that's something, Tom, I would say is if you are grid soil sampling and pulling them from the exact same points where you know where your yield monitor is saying you have certain yield levels, you can see really quickly which ones are giving me more yield and I should focus on those ones just a little bit more.
Yeah, and one of the great lines that Neil Kinsey had at his seminar this year is kind of what I've been trying to always come back to and follow up and making sure that I'm not stepping outside the box, that the most important aspect of fertility is the balance between the elements, not only each element necessarily, but individually a balance of all soil elements is necessary. And that's what I keep coming back to as my check.
Now, you mentioned you're doing some fall tillage. Is this you're spreading fertilizer and then trying to get it down in the soil? Is that part of the fertility or part of the tillage, or is it more about residue management?
Both. So under furrow irrigation, it's very easy to moldboard plow and bury residue and also put a little bit of phosphorus and a little bit of potassium and plow that down. And the next year you have a clean slate to plant your next crop into.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's important. There's just so many different things to try to set that next crop up. Now, on the rented ground, maybe a little different story than what you're doing on the owned ground, where you know for sure you got that for as long as you don't go broke on the farm, or as long as you get an opportunity to keep farming. So talk to us about this year and this year's crop. What did you see out there?
Well, on rented ground, you got to go with crop removal, and you got to get your minimums to where they will sufficiently feed a crop, but you're also trying to definitely not go broke and try not to put fertilizer that will release for the next 10 years either. The majority of the crops were pretty good. We had good weather right up until a few of us had a hailstorm, but not all of us. But then again, that is life. Eventually, you will get a hailstorm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just hope that's the one time in 30 years. So you got 29 years of clean running now after this one.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Tom. Well, good to hear from you. Glad things are going well, and good luck here. Stay safe this fall.
You too. I want everybody to stay safe as well.
All right, Brian, got a few more questions I want to get to here before the end of the show. Get this one from Diego, and he said, I'm an agronomist in Argentina and wanted to know if you noticed any differences on your farm since you've had a drought this year based on the tillage system that you used. Did you see strip till versus minimum till or no till yielding better than another one on this type of year? I'm a big fan of your show, and I'm using your knowledge on my farms here in Argentina.
Well, first of all, we didn't have a drought the entire year. The first half of the growing season, we had normal moisture. The last half of the growing season, we had nothing. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't see anything real major, but I'd say this. We just finished yesterday, and the last field we did of corn was the only field where we did strip-till corn, and that was our best yield. So if that tells you anything, now granted, that's a good field, really good field, but that went 250, which I was just telling our guys, you know, 250 when we have had no rain for 3.5 months, I'm pretty happy with that. I mean, yeah, I'd like to see 300, but 250, no rain the last half of the year, I'm okay. Anyway, yeah, we have typically seen, so you go back to like 2012, that was the last time we had a real bad drought year. Although 2013 wasn't much better, but we like strip till in those cases for two reasons. One, we have, I mean, I call it mostly no till because really 3/4 of that field is no till. It's only 1/4 in those zones where you're tilling. So we've saved moisture that way. But the other thing is we've placed fertilizer down deep, and that's what you really need and want in drought years. But we've done a bunch of that in our other fields too, and I think that really helped us. So, I mean, the last three fields we did went, let's see, four fields. I think it was like 235, 200, 235, 250. So, you know, it's not bad, but we had placed so much fertilizer down deep, I think that's really made a difference.
Yeah, I really like that too. And I just keep in mind about how plants draw those nutrients in, and they're pulling them in with water. And if you've got moisture down deep in the soil longer than you do up in those top few inches, which we're going to have in dry land farming when we get dry like this, you've got a chance to keep pulling that nutrient in all through the season. And yes, it really, really made a difference for us on our farm and our fields that we built up, like Tom was just talking about, getting high levels of fertility out there. That really showed up this year, our good fields versus our newer fields that we haven't built up yet. Yeah, big difference in yield. Well, thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.